most all of you know, we are in our 7th year since the catastrophe of 311. Cataclysm, disaster, calamity, catastrophe. I don't know, I run out of words. Fukushima is all of that and more. It is the greatest misfortune to fall upon humanity in recorded history, caused by humanity. We're so smart, we decided to boil water by splitting the atom and creating fission and boiling that water to turn those turbines and make electricity so we could stay online and enter our private lives on Facebook. That was what it was all about. Look, this situation is so out of control with Fukushima. It is so bad. And for those of you hoping that the Trump administration would finally become the first governmental authority to make a formal statement about the danger we are in and the simple fact that, as we have proven on this program over and over and over, we are at the doorstep of a great extinction event. And that includes us. We're already seeing it. The food chain in the ocean is broken, never to be repaired in our lifetimes, maybe the lifetimes of our great to the 20th power grandchildren. We don't know. It's running across North America, in the ground, in the water, in the animals, the insects. We are looking literally at the beginning of an extinction event. And the Trump administration, nor the Obama administration, nor the Bush administration, nor the Clinton administration, they wouldn't say anything about nuclear power being a problem. And now, in the last 7 years since Fukushima, every opportunity to say something has been studiously avoided. In fact, the government has run from it. We haven't. And I must say that there, to my knowledge, in the Western world, are only 4 people who are constantly talking about an extinction event, which means you die and your children die and animals die and plants die and the planet dies. We have blown it here. And those 4 people are yours truly, Yoichi Shimatsu, Dana Durnford, and a gentleman we have the great pleasure to have on the program tonight, the 4th man on the planet Earth who speaks fluent English, who is talking about this. His name is Kevin Blanche. Dana, welcome back. I'm going to let you set this up and introduce your friend Kevin Blanche to us as well.
Yeah, well, like, Kevin is the planet's friend, is the best way to look at it. And in the field of what I'm at all the time, Kevin is a leader on his own, in his own right. He's out there on the ground the entire time, right from the get-go, I would say is the best way to put it, and a couple of decades before it happened. So, like, you can't have a better history or a better forte into the field. Now, Kevin, as anybody knows Kevin, he's traveled to every opportunity to get in front of somebody's face and yell at him, call him a scumbag, if right. necessary, in other words. And that's something we don't see, right? We don't see people literally. We see it in other kind of activism, but we don't see it in nuclear.
Now, he doesn't know fear. He has no fear. Fear has no business being involved with trying to save the planet. You don't fear trying to save the planet. You do it, and that's what he's doing.
You got to go to war, yeah. You got to put on your war face, and you got to be clever and smart and intelligent and articulating and intuitive, and you got to have an awful big soul to challenge that industry, because it's such a violent, vicious bunch of thugs. You really, like, you understand that right away. I understood it right away. And people like Kevin, who's been around a lot longer than us at it, and his dad, who was a victim of the testing way back in the day. So it's that whole legacy that gives someone like Kevin the credibility, mm-hmm. but then to have him go out on the street and go to different countries and mm-hmm. get on video and call him, thanks for giving me cancer. And some of my favorite clips in the whole world are from Kevin's out there bashing the nuclear industry. Because I want to do it, but I can't do it.
And no, you have been blessed. Nobody's with a great legal system to take care of all of us. That's a wonderful thing we have. Listen, let's bring Kevin Blanche on right now. Kevin, who has, by the way, 2 PhDs, is a man who is beyond articulate and beyond, as I said, brave. Actually, he wouldn't probably consider himself to be brave. He's just doing what needs to be done. He's a human. He's a servant of the planet and of nature. And that's what he's doing. Welcome, Kevin. Great to have you on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate you guys. And like I said, we're in the ultimate war. And to think such a teeny small group is willing to go to war with these monsters, because that's what they are, and everybody's going to fall in line, is beyond obscene. You know, the people that raised me and the activists that came in front of me, you know, I was brought up in this as an activist, really. My father was a, you know, Special Forces Marine who was nuked to death in the Nevada test site. But, you know, those guys were activists. They stood up, you know, right. And right. We all learned when we were children. I mean, we all grew up in the United States in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and we knew what nuclearism was. I mean, it isn't like we don't know. We were taught.
Exactly.
I mean,
yeah,
we know. Our worst fear was a meltdown. You know, an epic, epic ultimate meltdown. We already knew Hiroshima, Nagasaki, you know, all these things that came before it. But this, a major nuclear meltdown, was our worst fears. And when it happens, everybody runs from it. All the people that were supposedly the activists, supposedly had the field, they ran from it, which to me still boggles my mind. It just exposed what North America, what a bunch of weaklings and what a bunch of cowards, and, you know, this whole community, and what a fraud academia has evolved into, and what a fraud, you know, all these people are protectors and our legal system and all these protectors we're supposed to have. It just exposed what a fraud they all are.
Well, what a betrayal, Kevin. This is really the ultimate betrayal when they won't tell us about what we have done to the planet. We as a species, we have turned loose an extinction event upon ourselves.
Well, I've been saying for years and years, I'm living the country and western version of Hamlet. Mm-hmm. It is betrayal. Mm-hmm. And betrayal's the hardcore, and, you know, that's what Obama did to us. He betrayed us.
Sure,
Gene McCarthy betrayed us. They all betrayed us. And so, you know, we knew who the players. We know the Chris Busbys and the Helen Keldicott and the Arne Gunnar Sergio Profiteers, and I've always known that. And, you know, we know who those people are. But the people that really betrayed us are people like Obama. You know, people that are paid like Gene McCarthy, people, you know, the Nuclear Regulatory Committee, all these different agencies. And the one that really gets into me, and I think it's to Dana too, because we both same rhetoric on this, is the marine biologist community. He's handicapped. I'm full of AML leukemia. I mean, I'm screaming, it's going to give you cancer, it's going to give you cancer. 7 months later, I was given a death sentence with cancer. Yet, we're doing all this work. And these people are paid to do it, and they refuse to do it.
They're absolutely instructed. If you do, you're toast. And they are
exactly. They know where their bread's buttered.
Of course, absolutely. They're honest to God. I mean this from all points of sincerity. I cannot believe that these government agents, well, I call them bureaucrats, I call them agents, they will not say a word. They are scared, frightened, intimidated. They will not stand up. Not one of them in the EPA, in any kind of environment, the environmentalists. What frauds these people are. Fraud by the lie of omission. That's what it is.
Well, and you think about it statistically, I'm an old stats for it's statistically impossible for, except for what you just said. They've been told, which I've been told behind closed doors many times, because I'm up and down that coast. I'm all over. I protest and all these. You know, I've been told in secret and quiet. You know,
right?
We've been threatened. We've been told.
Sure.
You know, and so, and they'll tell you that in private. And so, and I then says, well, so what? So have I been threatened? We are coward. That if somebody threatened me, I would scream it even louder. You know, and so, like I said, they're cowards.
That's the way, that's really the only response. Go ahead, Kevin.
I just got back, you know, again, working the coast some more, you know, between San Francisco and Pismo,
uh-huh.
You know, documenting the tide pools. And it's getting progressively so bad now. You know, 2 years ago, it was horrible. It's been, you know, progressively, but it's to the point now. And so just so you know, I have a lot of whistleblowers and a lot of people I'm connected with now. But, you know, the Oregon salmon collapse, that nobody's talking about, which I screamed is going to happen in 2016. Sam will go to sea for 5 years. I got a call from my whistleblower inside Noah this morning. You know, he talks to me all the time. And he said they're finally talking about the Endangered Species Act. And I said, well, you know, by law, that should have kicked in a long time ago. So the fact of the matter is this, not that these agents are cowards, where by law they had to close the Pacific Ocean Bell salmon fishing because it fell under that number last spring, and they didn't.
Uh-huh.
Those are criminal acts.
Yeah,
those are criminal acts.
Right.
You know, so they're violating their own laws, and it's us as the populace refuse to keep these public servants to hold their feet to the fire. They can violate our laws, and we don't. There's no accountability whatsoever for that. I don't understand that. How can that even be possible? You know, if you and I break the law, we go to jail. You know, but these guys can do whatever they want, and the public just—it's, you know—it's like a monarchy. It's like serfdom. They just bow to their feet and let them do whatever they want. Which I it's mind-boggling to me.
Couldn't agree more.
So,
you said it perfectly. This tide pool issue. A couple of years ago, people were still writing to me, and they would say, well, I went down in my tide pools. There's still plenty of life there. Well, I'd like to see them go down to the beach now and take a look. How bad has it gotten in the last 2 years? Now, you've been reporting. I've seen your videos. You're in the Monterey area. Ed Ricketts and the famous Steinbeck stuff and all that. How bad is it now? The last one I saw with you, it looked like it was on Mars or Venus with water all of a sudden.
It couldn't be more dead. It's impossible to be deader than they are now. And even at the Monterey Aquarium, because they've argued with me for the last 3 or 4 years, you know, these so-called men, these people say the same thing to me. Oh, my type, I'm like, show me. People have this cognitive discourse that they go back several years and they think it was just last week. I'm like, okay. Like, people still tell me, oh, no. And I'm like, come on, let's go. I had a woman in Monterey tell me how great they were out at the Alcorn. I says, come on, get in the car, we'll go on a date. We went out there and she says, oh, my God. I can't believe how dead they are.
I hate to laugh, but it's black humor. It's sickening.
It is. They're dead. And so in Monterey, the aquarium, when I was down there this winter, you know, we waited and I worked really at it to catch it at the very low. We had the lowest tide we've had in 3 years and I timed it to those exact. I sat right there at Ricketts' very best tide pools and I know where the best tide pools all in all capital. And I sat there and waited because when that tide goes out, you don't know when it's going to happen and it goes out right now. And so when it went out, I scurried and I mean, I was up and down that peninsula. I put in miles and miles and documenting those tide pools. I found one bat star. And the whole thing. And so I go in the Monterey Aquarium and, you know, they're like, yeah, they don't argue with me anymore. They're like, they're devastated. You know, the biologists in there, you know, of course they still won't say Fukushima, but before when I used to tell them it was all Fukushima, they would, you know, kind of snicker. Oh, they don't snicker anymore.
No.
You know, and so it's so obvious that it just simply broke the food chain. You know, it's just like I was saying a few years ago, look, it's a starvation event. You know, big fish eat little fish. It's very easy. You break the luminescence.
Exactly.
Then, you know, the sardine and the anchovies collapse, the salmon collapse, you know, then the humans collapse. I mean, and that's exactly what's going on. And the thing that is so dramatic about this, people are still waiting for, oh, you know, humans are doing fine. No, they're not. The CDC's come right out themselves and says longevity started to head negative in 2012, and it's collapsing fast.
Longevity, hold on, I'm going to go back. Let me rewind. Longevity began to collapse in 2012.
It's declining. That's according to the CDC.
Okay.
The longevity of the life.
So, in other words, we're already not living as long in the aggregate. The graph is going down.
Yes, that's the CDC themselves.
Right.
And so, you know, here we have bypass surgery. We have all these incredible medical breakthroughs.
Right.
And we're not living long. We have availability to good, clean, organic food and supplements and everything is right at our fingertips. And people use them. They're still dying. So what it's in the I call it Fuktonium, by the way. You know, that's part of my gig.
That's good.
Because a PhD, really. Yeah. And by the way, I want to tell Dana this, while I've got you. I really believe that Dana Dunford will be awarded right there where he lives, PhDs. And the awarded PhD is what we want. We don't want no peer-reviewed PhD. Now, what good that can do us, because we'll probably be dead when we get them ordered to us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the work of traditional PhD,
right,
you hypothesize, it's going to kill the ocean, it's going to break. But then you have to do 3 to 4 years at least of the field work. And
sure,
then you have to defend your work.
Right.
Well, what has Dana done? What have I done? Exactly that. And so, you know, sadly, we were right. You know, people could argue with us, in yourself, Jeff, and, you know, Yossi, people could argue with us all they wanted. Oh, it's not this. But the bottom right line is, everything we said has came to fruition.
Everything.
We were right, sadly.
Everything. The first week after that earthquake and tsunami, when that plant was destroyed, and it was destroyed essentially on the spot, and they were pouring all that seawater in there, it became clear to me, and I'm no clairvoyant, I'm not a psychic, I'm not a seer, it was obvious to me where the science was going to take this catastrophe, and it has, and it's gotten worse and worse.
Well, you know, I was out in Nevada, I was at the Energy Solutions protest site protesting the nuclear waste coming in that day, the Italian waste coming in here in Utah. I was out there. And I got home.
They're bringing it in from Italy?
They bring it in from all over the world.
And Utah, so Utah is a repository now.
Energy Solutions is out here behind the Nevada-Utah border out here. And so it's supposed to be
Energy Solutions, that's cute. Where are they? How are they storing it? Are these fuel assemblies? What are they?
No, it's supposedly low-level stuff. So we found opera generators here, you know, and that nightmare. So,
and they're just putting it in the damn ground. They're digging a hole and burying
it. That's all they do. That's it. That's all it is. And they cheat and they lie. And, you know, I've got them kicked out of here. They're going to Texas, by the way. And same with the San Onofre shutdown. That waste isn't going on the beach. That's my work. I've been battling my whole life. It's going to Texas. That's why they named Rick Perry head of the DOE. It's going to WHIP in New Mexico. And it's going. That's the
can
whole.
They can't even plan. Get into WHIP, can they? It's still off.
Oh, yeah, they reopened it. WHIP's reopened now.
Oh, really?
So,
how did they cordon off the
$2 billion? $2 billion they spent.
Right.
You know, and it's clean and it's cheap. So they've been working on it ever since. It blew up on Valentine's Day, you know, in 2014. And so, no, they've been secretly working on it the whole time, and it reopened. And the MOX fuel, by the way, coming from Juvana through Savannah River, is for the last 2 months has been going to it.
Are these fuel assemblies?
Yes. Oh, yes.
They're bringing the whole assemblies. That's not legal to do?
Well, they put them on dry cast. It's illegal now, but they don't care. They put them in what they call dry cask.
Yeah, yeah. Tell our listeners what the dry cask is. First of all, the assemblies are about, 12 to 14 feet long. They've got a dozen or more of these 1 inch in diameter, long, 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 thin fuel rods in an assembly.
They're made right behind my house, the Western Little Mountain, Western Zirconium.
What are you living
here
for?
They came here after. They don't fill them full. They just make the rods here.
I got it.
You know, the uranium's not in there, but they make the rods, but there's 210 in assembly.
Oh, there's that many? You know, I didn't get that. That's wild. Wow.
Yeah, they're heavy. They're big things, and so that's a big deal. And so right here where I live, Peterson Fabrication makes, that was the container that blew up at WHIP. They're stainless steel containers.
Huh.
And so their answer has been, because when this whole nuclear dynamic came up play, Congress, when the whole fight was going in the 60s and the 70s about this nuclear, which is not magic, and it's really not even split in the atom, it's uranium, which they use this tremendous amount of uranium out of the ground, which is uranium-239 or 235, and they have to turn it to 238, so they spin it. It's a centrifusion process, and then the free radicals go loose. And so, but anyway, it's really not that magic. It's really not much different than coal. It's just another step because there is burning, mm-hmm. you know, and that's mm-hmm. what they do. But so the assemblies, when they used up, they have to replace them. They turn into plutonium, all kinds of different plutonium-239.
And they don't even have to be moxed. They don't have to be moxed to go into plutonium.
Just without being moxed.
Oh.
No, without being moxed, the 238, the 239, the 240 becomes free radicals into the thing. It has to be contained.
Uh-huh.
And so then that fission process, they become so hot that when they're wore out, it creates that. It creates that heat source. And so they have to keep them cool. So they have to stay cool. So they build swimming pools, which are spent fuel pools, and they put them in the pool. So the big fight was, okay, you have to say someplace to put them. Why? We're, science will catch up and we'll get revitrification. Sure, they will. And so they passed Yucca Mountain.
Right.
Congress passed it in 1971.
Right.
Well, you put it in the hole.
Still waiting.
And so, yes.
Should they have used that, Kevin? And where are you on that? Should they have used Yucca?
Well, I was always against Yucca, but, you know, because I was against the whole thing. But
yeah.
I'm one of these people now that, you know, I call myself the logical activist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I used to say, you make it, you eat it. We don't make it here in Utah. We don't want your shit no more. But, so... The thing is, it's a global issue because the jet stream really doesn't, you know, nuclear fire doesn't give a shit about a state line or a line sort of.
Not that I've seen.
I'm to the, So I'm to the point now that I call Yucca the best of, the best worst option. I used to be one of these shooting into space guys. That's what I.
Oh, God, PhD no. Yeah, no.
But there are bad ideas. There's, there's no good ideas.
Yeah, so, the big problem with Yucca Mountain. Was that it was how much heat can he contain in the mountain. And so this is what the MOX was about reclaiming the hot particles from the fuel, reburning that in the reactors, which is releasing the really super 2 million times worse isotopes into the community at the same time, but getting that hot particle out of the product and storing the rest of it at Yucca Mountain. So you can put more at Yucca Mountain because it's all about the heat, ultimately, and the longevity of that heat. So that's ultimately what I found
and
out about
MOX fuel. The whole MOX thing has been absolute. This whole catastrophe that's going in Santa River, you know, Chicago Bridge and Westinghouse, they're taking Toshiba completely apart. They got caught in such incredible fraud, and the Obama administration wouldn't do anything, and now the Trump administration. They built the United States government, Savannah River. I call that the Tower of Babylon. That's the MOX fuel plant. Which never worked, and they've thrown up their hands and says we don't have it. They billed the government for being 70% complete, $17 billion, right. And now
Lindsey
they come
Graham
out the DOE goes
McCain.
In. Yeah, they're
Lindsey
only
Graham
20%
John McCain
complete.
Is about that from
Dana, what?
Yeah. What? Lindsey Graham and John McCain were who got most of that funded, and
that's
we're pushing
right.
The MOX.
No, facilities. Crazy Graham and the lunatic McCain.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah. Just true,
Lindsey
real life
Graham
demons.
Is their guy because it's in South Carolina, you know, and so they're building this thing, and they've been caught. They got caught. They came out. The DBOE came just out December 5th with their investigation. They've billed the government $14 billion and said they were 70% complete. The DOE, they're 20% complete. They've overbilled the government by $14 billion. So, you know, Toshiba merged with Westinghouse and Chicago Bridge. Toshiba is one of the biggest companies in the world. Their stock's gone from 480 to 180. Less. They're going bankrupt. They were supposed to report their earnings 2 months ago. They've come out. We're done. The CEO says the nuclear industry has wiped us out. We're out of options. So they're taking apart one of the biggest companies on Earth because they merged with Westinghouse and Chicago Bridge, which is the nuclear industry, so-called building these nuclear. So even the economics of this, you know, they find a way to mask it over and just lie.
Yeah.
It's the greatest lie. And here's Fukushima happening, killing the ocean, and these madmen are trying to build new ones.
Unreal. Hold on a minute, Kevin. We have to pause at the bottom of the hour.
Okay.
Dana and Kevin and I will be right back. Kevin Blanche has joined us tonight, Dana and I here. Yoshi is off, he's traveling, and we are, once again, every Monday, covering the greatest calamity in recorded human history. that nobody else will talk about with regularity every week here for 6 years. We're into our seventh year now, and we'll keep at it. I don't see any kind of a breakthrough. I don't know that there's even anything on the drawing board anymore. Their great ice wall and their the best robots they could make last about 10, 15 minutes at the most, and they fry. It's just, it's bad. But what's really worse is the actual condition of the food chain. When you lose a link in the food chain that cannot grow back, it's over. You've got to understand how it works. These links are all vital. They're essential. They are irreplaceable, and they are breaking. And the animals are dying. And if any of you are eating anything from the Pacific Ocean and you've been listening to this program, you ought to have your heads examined. The Pacific Ocean is gone. It's toxic. It's radioactive. It's dead. And that's the sad truth. And we're not exaggerating. We've been saying this for years and years. Kevin, hang on a second. Let's hear from Dana for a minute. Bring us up to date, Dana.
Yeah, and we got more headlines. 100 million salmon missing from the Pacific.
Missing,
Kevin.
Huh?
Yeah, Kevin's covered the salmon missing now over the last couple of years, particularly really good. He's been on top of it too.
Yeah.
And so now they're emitting everything finally in big bunches, like 100 million. So this is like, oh my goodness, time. And so why ain't everybody on the planet screeching their heads off at this stage? And like, so we can't change the death of the Pacific. We can't change anything.
There's no remediation. There's nothing we can do. And as I said earlier, there's nothing on the drawing board to deal with Fukushima. They don't even know where the reactors are. How many tons? 600? Of reactor fuel has gone down, headed toward the center of the Earth, or somewhere down there.
Oh, there's around, good God, excuse me, around 25 million pounds.
Okay. Yeah.
That's missing.
All. That's all.
Just at the one spot. And so this, this is really something what's happened here. Like, there's 6 reactor cores per building. And then not counting what's common spent fuel pool, 9 million pounds. And so, like, this is unbelievable what we had happen. And if the world was awake, we could come up with the technology. That's how it's done. And we have 7 billion people on the planet. And so we have a really good possibility compared to, say, you know, 50 years ago. Because we have a lot more people on the planet. We have a better – and people now have access to the world's biggest library on the planet. And et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. No matter where you to who you are, you kind of got access to in one sense, right?
Right.
And so we've never had that kind of ability to solve these issues ourselves without, you know, going ordering great big books and trying to work it out. And so all of a sudden we have instant access. We're able to get the logistics and get up to speed immediately in one sense. Anybody watches my material, because I provide everything at the one time, I just jam it down everybody's throat. So if that finds anybody who's on the prowl trying to put it together, then now they got a really good foundation to work with for thereafter, a real solid one. And so I never had that, right? And at that time, nobody else would have either. That's why I put it together and continue to do it and refine it, is because that wasn't available. It was so difficult just to ascertain the buildings themselves, specifically exactly what they looked like for sure, without all the propaganda screaming. It's like a banana potato chip walking in the sunshine, getting on an airplane screaming at you all over the place. But to actually have a spot where you can calm down and rationalize what each one is, we never had that before, see? And so they denied us the ability to have it in a cohesive environment. And so that's the frustration. And so I just got hope, right? And people like Kevin are out there on the ground pounding and grinding, getting in their faces, making them regret, making them sleepless at night, haunting them. They, you know, they might not get nowhere with it, but they got to drive past him at the end of the day, right? They might have a smuggle, right? But at that night, they got to look themselves in the friggin' mirror, and they got to remember that guy. There's something about that guy. Because when you meet Kevin, you like, if you ever met Kevin in the context of in that environment, you're not going to forget him. He's not just some random protester.
Well, look at his videos.
He knows how to look. He's got that 1,000-yard steer, you know, from doing it for so long.
So they all know me. That's the sad thing. All these people misunderstand, they know me personally because I am up in their face. And I've been doing it for decades. And so, you know, Allison knows me very personally, McFarland. You know, and I warned her not to take the freaking NRC job. You know, a lot of these senators, Wyden knows me. You know, my senators that our governor knows, they all know me very personally. Mm-hmm. And they're afraid of me. And because, you know, they see me, and just like Dana says, because I call them the liar that they are in an articulate way, you know, and it just exposes that it's all about the money and it's all about whatever. And so the Navy was sent in to entomb this thing. 32 ships were sent in immediately. You know, and Obama had him. So I know what happened in the Situation Room. I have the transcript of what happened. A lot of stuff got leaked to me in the very early days because I was the only one around screaming and yelling. And
run this, go a little slower, Kevin. You say 30-some ships were sent into the Fukushima area?
32 ships were sent in.
To entomb it.
Were sent in to entomb Fukushima.
In concrete.
Yes.
All right.
Yes, they were sent in. You know, the Navy has a whole fleet. That's all they are is radiation mitigation ships. You know, for, you know, the nuclear slabs, whatever.
Right.
So, you know, the Operation Friendship, it was sent in. So inside the Situation Room, Gregory Jackal was head of the, you know, NRC then. But the guy, with one guy, really, who's run this whole thing, his name is John Holdren. John Holdren is head of the science and technology team for the Obama. He was named, he's the Cal Berkeley, look him up, he's a eugenicist from Berkeley. Anyway, Berkeley runs this whole show on MIT. So he was inside the Situation Room, and to protect the nuclear industry, you know, the only power that Barack Obama ever wielded in his entire lame 8 years of lies, he backed him out. I mean, the Admiral himself, I had the FOIA documents have proved everything that I said, that the Admiral fully said he wanted the entire island of, he wanted all 800,000 military personnel and American civilians evacuated off the island of Japan. And he stuck to that for 3 months. And so Obama overrode him, John, on the advice of John Holdren, who was head of the CIA, and they developed a 32 team inside the Situation Room over the thing on the so-called mitigation of Fukushima. Which turned into be nothing but cover-up. You know, and Berkeley went in, we've got the technology, we can handle this, and it didn't work. It obviously failed, and now it's 6-7 years, we're going over 6 years later, we have a new administration in. You know, Abid, the very first person that meets with Trump at Trump Towers, here he is, the rat of all rats, Abid.
Now, I'll cut you off for a second, Kevin. Now, okay. I read emails that Kevin's talking about there earlier, where all the government, American government, was in Tokyo, and so like, I know what I can't articulate it right off the top of my head, but generally how it worked out was exactly what Kevin's saying. In the other words, I'm just backing up what Kevin's saying, but these emails are available at NRC. They're linked under my videos all the time, and there's 4 million or something like it, and it's just fascinating, the cover up as it was going on, the emittings right away that all the fuel was gone by the 18th with the correspondence, and they would contact America would contact them, they would tell the Japanese. So Tokyo or Japan, if Japan was going to take an aspirin, they would ask these people in Tokyo, which were Americans, and they were always talking about potassium and radiation protection gear for themselves and everybody in the room and that. But there was just unbelievable correspondence back and forth, and then, okay, go ahead and take an aspirin. Right, so it went from TEPCO employee to the boss of TEPCO to these people in Tokyo, which were Americans, to America, to all through the administration, all the way back to the employee, and then he went ahead and took the aspirin. So nobody done nothing there, and there was this constant whining in the emails that nobody was allowed to do nothing without it traveling this incredibly stupid route before anything was okayed. And so the Americans were controlling everything, and they were afraid to move
from the very beginning.
Tokyo. Oh, go ahead, Kevin. Yeah.
And so I was Hillary's email got leaked to me 4.5 years ago. And so, you know, I'm very careful. I've run this by attorneys because there's certain stuff that I can't forward on. I mean, I'm involved with Anonymous. I'm the guy who started the Million Mass March. So I know what they did to Barrett Brown, and I know what I can forward and what I can't. And so I started dancing around, and Dana could verify this. I was reading Hillary's emails on the cover-up of Fukushima, which Hummer wrote 4 years ago. You know, and the FOIA documents come out this year, and they were all the cover-up of Fukushima.
Huh.
You know, Hillary's, the State Department, don't go outside. It's not worth it. Make sure you take a shower. Make sure you wash all your clothes. These are emails that are going with inside the State Department between Hillary's group.
Wow, and they're back in D.C. Yeah, they're
that's
in
right.
D.C.
That's right.
Yep. Well, they had people in Japan also, the State Department
and
also. So there were emails going
from
Hillary Japan
to the U.S. Hillary was the one who set the deal, right, Kevin? Hillary was the one who set the deal not to check food for radiation coming in from Japan.
Well, what happened in the very early days? So
they turned that over about a year and a half later, but for the first year and a half, there was no one checking. Right, there was 14 prefectures.
And then she's like, I have to talk to Kissinger. And then she went in. Hillary Clinton went there. So did Senator Wyden. They went there. So did Kissinger. They went to Japan, you know. And so the whole thing was all the cover-up and orchestrated the cover-up. And, you know, and Obama stands on the White House lawn on the 17th and says, you know, the plume's okay. We want you to know what to do. Well, he was flown out later that day with the CEO of Chicago Bridge, Jeff Romero, the CEO of GAE, the CEO of Westinghouse, the biggest entourage in U.S. history. They were flown to Brazil. All of them, and you know, that's where the whole cover-up was orchestrated to protect this ungodly, disgusting octopus called the nuclear industry, which is all government money, the biggest welfare queens in history. You know, so it's killing us.
Like a lot of the celebrities and wealthy people in particular went into lockdown right away and started ordering vehicles with radiation protection on them. There was a huge industry show popped up right away. They were expecting the worst to happen. They were expecting the collapse. The PR firms were in panic. The entire apparatus was set to work on this to bring it back down under control. And the nuclear industry is just incredibly powerful. Unbelievable.
2 days after Fukushima happened, I got a phone call. You know, because I put my phone number and I got this phone call from this woman. She says, if I told you my name, you would know who I am. I live on the west side in Manhattan. And I used to live in New York, so I know. And she's like, if I told you who I was, but she says, this is as bad as you're saying, because I was screaming about it on the internet. She says, we're out of here. And I said, where are you going? We have a place in Argentina. And I says, really? And so this woman, she says, if I told you my name, you would recognize exactly who we are, my family, blah, blah, blah. So then about 2 years later, because, you know, I got cancer after that, and then I was so sick, I got cancer. I got a call from the same woman. And she says, do you remember when I called you the day? And I says, yeah. She wouldn't tell me who she was. She says, we're in Argentina, and we're not coming back. And she says, there are a lot of wealthy people here, and a lot of them are Japanese. Which I'm connected with a lot of Japanese from my university days, and the people that were inside there, a lot of the wealthy Japanese, that's exactly, they flew out that day, and they've never gone back to this day. They're in Argentina, you know, and so this whole, like Dana says, this whole thing spruck up. They knew, you know, they knew what this was, and, you know, so, and, but they're the only ones that were told.
Let me ask you a question.
I just
got an email here, and this is something I talked about. Oh, it wasn't me who first thought this up. I can't remember who it was now. It's someone in Hawaii. How about dropping, this is a question in the email. How about dropping a large nuclear bomb on what's left of Fukushima?
Well, there's your option right there, which has been kicked around for years.
That's right.
We know that there's only two options on meltdowns, and we've known this for 30, 40, 50 years, exactly what Gorbachev did, 580,000 men going there and entomb that thing, which is still only a temporary fix. And this was so massive and so big, and a lot of people don't realize this thing blew up multiple times. It blew up again on June 14th, it blew up again of 2011. I have all the visual proof of this. Then it blew up again the summer of 2013. These things blew up multiple times. It just kept blowing up.
Hey, Kevin, for the email, The problem being is that when you drop a nuclear bomb on the ground, the ground comes in contact with fissionable product for a millionth of a second, and that's the nuclear fallout. And it lifts up a million tons of
topsoil
and rock.
Yes,
it atomizes zero salts. Atomizing and aerosoling that is no different than the nuclear waste falling down.
No, the nanoparticulates would be up in the atmosphere 200 years from now.
Yeah, it'd just make it worse.
It'd be so hot. Such a thing as hot particles, then this is like, what? Oh, my goodness. This will burn right through your lung and through the bone and blah, blah, blah.
The other thing that I thought about was, what about drilling adjacent to the plant and putting a nuke, say, a half mile under it, creating a big cavern, and the plant would collapse in on it?
Well, there probably already is a cavern there.
I would think. See, the problem with that is you got no way to really close the top of it with any ease. The whole damn thing was built on fill material, so the water would go in there, and how do you close it off once you got a big hole in the ground?
Well, I think that their answer, because they're in there, the bags are in, they're in there. It isn't like they're not trying. So the thing is their answer's been the simple thing it's always been, just push it into the Pacific Ocean, the big freaking toilet. And that's what they've done.
That's been their backup plan for all of these places, yeah.
Yes. Well, just like you guys are the ones that reported, somebody turned me on that Yossi was saying that they were taking the whale ships and dumping the bags off, New Zealand.
And in the Antarctic as well.
Yeah, I mean, unbelievable. And I'm like, well, that's how they play. And so,
whaling
ships.
That's
been their answer, just to kick it. And now it's so far out of control.
Mm-hmm.
Is there an answer?
Yeah,
just like TEPCO says we're relying on yet to be developed technology. Well, that's what they've been telling us on the nuclear industry on Knox Inc. They have no answer.
No.
They don't even make it up as they go anymore.
Kevin, do you foresee those wrecked buildings falling over at any point? They're just going to eventually collapse. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, like Dana says, Dana does it so beautifully, and he pulls it out, the before and after, and the whole lot. The fucking things blew to smithereens immediately, not no tsunami. We know that they're Mach 1, Mach 2. My PhD, I worked on this. They can only handle about a 7.5. This was 9.
Right.
Those
9.1.
Things cracked and blew to smithereens.
Mm-hmm.
So, the buildings are... There's nothing left, these shells that they put up with the
and all the spent fuel, all the spent fuel, the spent fuel in the fuel pools, that all went up.
Yeah, it blew to smithereens immediately. Zerk fires all over. Now the FOIA documents come out, prove what Dana and I said right off the get. And all three of us said right off the get, they're lying, spent fuel pool, please. I was reporting 6 meltdowns. It took me a year and a half to convince anybody was in our circles of the world that it was even one meltdown.
That's the power of the media. You keep lying to people.
Yes.
It becomes their reality.
They kill themselves. That's the sad thing about this. The top reporter, they can lie about, 9/11. They can lie about the wars. They can lie. But this one, they're killing themselves.
It's true.
That's what's obscene
it's true.
About this. I mean,
and you mentioned celebrities and the rich people having land in Argentina. Ted Turner bought land down there 20 years ago. I don't know, 500,000 acres. Yeah. The Bushes bought in Uruguay or Paraguay. I can't remember which.
Yes. They're all down there.
They've got their planes on standby. The only thing that will work for Donald Trump and the economy is another war. And people are beginning to say it now. We got 4 or 5 red hot venues for a war. Which could go full-blown nuclear.
It. I read the budget.
Yeah.
I mean, he's crazy. He's insane. I mean, I listened to his address. That's all he talked about. He was quoting Rosie the Riveter.
It's all being programmed. We're headed to a war.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's what makes money in a depression every time. They're going to try and hold it to a limited nuclear exchange, I would suspect.
Yes.
But you don't know.
And then they could blame this whole death. All this, they crashed Radnet. They just raised the limits. I mean, it's poisoning the bejesus out of us already.
Yeah, the limits are science fiction now.
Now they can blame it on the war.
Sure, absolutely.
Putin popped one off or whatever. Yeah, that's exactly what they're going to do. It's their only excuse to say, the Pacific Ocean's dead.
It's a false flag to cover up Fukushima. It's funny.
Yep. Chinese popped one off in the Philippines. It's their only answer at this point. So, Trump's saying, oh, we need to give Japan nukes. What? Have you read the Yalta Accords? Have you read Yalta? I mean, you know, Yalta by the Sea, the Atlantic Conference. The United States is Japan. They're our 51st state. People forget that. You know, that's the only thing Obama ever said true when he went over there. These treaties were signed long before I was born. When they divided up the world, the United States took Japan. You know, the whole nuclear, 48 reactors offline. Did you see any rolling blackouts over there? Because they're not there. Those nuclear reactors are not there for freaking nuclear energy. They're there to make fuel for bombs.
That's what was going on there, too. Yeah.
Exactly.
That little democracy in the Middle East that has between 400 and 500 nukes, that's where they got them, a lot of them, right from that fuel.
The ocean currents from Japan run right around and hit North Korea and South Korea. South Korea doesn't care. Because the Americans are been there 50 years, but North Korea hates the American guts. Plus, they're being blamed for radiation, but it's endless radiation coming on top of
Japan. They know. Look what's going on in China.
They're dependent upon that coastline for food, right?
Mm.
So that fish is radiated. They know that, and to them, you know, like they're isolated, but they're not totally isolated. They just got the population isolated. And so this is 50 years of nonsense because, you know, all the other countries can just destroy Russia or North Korea in a matter of a few moments with nuclear weapons.
Mm-hmm.
It's just stupid.
Well, we'll see. There may well be a false flag. Somebody will light it one or two off and they'll blame that. That's what they're
going to do. In the meantime, the ocean's dead and,
gone.
It's hanging on a little bit.
They found cesium-137 in every ocean on the planet now. It's spread that far. So there you
go. Don't take that long.
No. Kevin Blanch, thank you for all that you've done 100 times over.
Thank you, Jeff. Thanks, Dana. Hang in there, you guys.
All right.
Keep up the good work.
Thanks, everybody. Take care. Good night, everybody.
Okay. Thanks, Dana.
Right on. All right. Thanks, you guys.
Okay. All right. That's our program tonight. Thank you for being here. And we will be back with you tomorrow night. And we'll talk then. Take care.